I should get, you know, 700-800 hands from the whole company. That's really kind of a chief measure of success for us, that people think of themselves as an extension and as a member of the security team in their day-to-day execution, whatever their day job is.
Hi, you're listening to The Secure Developer. It's part of the MyDevSecOps community, a platform for developers, operators, and security people to share their views and practices on DevSecOps, Dev and Sec collaboration, cloud security, and more. Check out mydevsecops.io to join the community and find other great resources. This podcast is sponsored by Sneak. Sneak is a dev-first security company helping companies fix vulnerabilities in open source components and containers without slowing down development. To learn more, visit sneak.io. On today's episode, Guy Pajani, president and co-founder of Sneak, talks to Michael Hanley. Mike has a really strong security background, which includes a master's degree in information security policy and management from Carnegie Mellon. He was also the senior member of the technical staff at CertCC, working on applied R&D programs for the US Department of Defense and the intelligence community. And now he's at Duo, where he leads the security research, development, and operations functions.
Welcome back to The Secure Developer. Thanks for tuning back in. Today we have a guest that deals with security, both in his job and sort of the constituents, I guess, those he caters to. And that's Mike Hanley, who heads up security at Duo. Thanks for coming onto the show, Mike.
Yep, thanks for having me, Guy. Happy to be here.
So, Mike, before we dig into the variety of topics that we have to review, can you tell us a little bit about yourself? You know, what is it that you do and how you got into security?
So, been in IT for roughly 20 years now. Got my start at Electronic Data Systems, working really strictly in like systems administration. Moved on later after graduate school to work primarily in the Defense Department and intelligence community space, where I got to work on a lot of what I would call sort of the 1% security problems, well-funded, well-resourced, very specific and kind of bespoke issues and problem sets. But when I found Duo in 2015, decided to join the team here and really focus on democratizing security and a mission where we were much focused on solving security for the 99% and sort of the most ubiquitous sets of problems around account takeover, endpoint security, et cetera. So it's sort of been my journey leading up to here. And of course, I've worn a couple of different hats in my time at Duo, but that was sort of the lead up to joining the group here.
Oh, very cool. I guess you're sort of almost taking the brains from the government, you know, and kind of spreading that learning, you know, building it into the solutions themselves.
Yeah, that's right. And it was good because when I joined here, you know, I was coming from a very applied research and development background. And my first job at Duo was actually not running the security team, but rather kind of running some of our Duo Labs program, if you're familiar with some of the open source projects that we've released there. So I spent some time getting that team off the ground and really focusing on what's our sort of 18 to 36 month strategic technical set of projects and exploratory work that we need to do to de-risk some of the opportunities in the space. But later on transitioned into running the rest of the security program here.
Very cool. And it's an interesting kind of transition there. So like, you know, you were building, I guess this is the maybe a perk or sort of related to the fact that Duo is a security company. So although the work you were doing was not, didn't have security in its title, the capabilities that it offered were security. So you built kind of that expertise. Is that the way to think about it?
Yeah. So really when I started here, you know, we were thinking primarily about applied security research and development. So what are the emerging technology opportunities or techniques or capabilities that can strategically advance what our customers are receiving from us. So, you know, security R&D to start, but then over time, it really just sort of naturally started to build out the rest of the functions that you would need in the security program. So, you know, we had labs in a stable place and then started building our application security engineering function, our corporate and cloud security function, our compliance function from there. So it was sort of a natural horizontal expansion of fleshing out the rest of the functions and seeding it with the existing competencies and capabilities that some of our staff had. But, you know, that whole build really ran from, I would say, you know, mid-2015 when I joined, I'd say we kind of had full operating capability across all of those functions by, you know, late 2017 or late 2018.
Got it. And what does the org look like now? So like today you head up sort of security at Duo, like what does that look like in terms of like different aspects of the team?
Yeah, you know, we have it really organized around a couple of different areas. First and foremost, we continue to have a research function. It is important for us to stay ahead of what our customers expect, emerging threats, changing technologies in the landscape, you know, availability of new pieces of hardware or software that might change the ecosystem in which our customers are operating and trying to secure their own businesses. So we spend, you know, a lot of time and energy making sure that we're ahead and leading the market in that space. So that's really where our Duo Labs team continues to operate. Then we have a function largely around how do we make sure we enable our engineering team to build and deliver secure products. So that's our application security engineering group. Their customers are the engineering and product teams and enabling good outcomes at the edges there. And then we have our cloud security team, which is how do we operate those products that we build and deploy securely, and you know, provides all the sort of traditional what you would think about for detection engineering, incident response, and operations pieces of the security group. And we've got a dedicated compliance function. As you might imagine, running security for a security company, you're generally going to be in a lot of situations where customers are asking you to prove or provide evidence or attestation to how you're securing your products, how you're securely developing them, how you map to various regulatory and compliance standards, and really importantly to our customers, how we help them achieve their compliance and regulatory outcomes through the uses of our products. So we've got a pretty, you know, substantial investment across all of those areas when you think about the functional layout of the team. There's a great deal of advantage to having them all under one roof, though, which is, while we have those teams functionally organized, there's a tremendous amount of cross-functional collaboration amongst the teams. And we really think about it as like, what are the right people to get the right jobs done, regardless of what their home team in the org chart is? The org chart's a way for us to sort of rationalize a big team and group work, but ultimately, we want the right people working on the right outcomes for the company and our customers.
It's a very unique, I mean, we have this at Sneak as well. So we're, you know, like I'm maybe a little bit more familiar, but it's a fairly unusual situation because you're a security provider. And so you've chosen to kind of put those two groups together, right? And sort of evolve it from securing others to sort of securing yourself, but sort of having cross-pollinating between those. What would you say like around the practices? So the groups work together, I guess they enrich one another. You know, first of all, like, do you see transition between the team? Do you see people moving from like one side of the fence to the other?
And in general, yeah, absolutely.
Practices or knowledge kind of move around.
Yeah, absolutely. We've had examples of all of the above. Plus, we've had examples of actually incubating net new functions in the security team that we've then sort of graduated into other functions of the business. So an example is actually our data science team. We initially hired a leader for that function and incubated that under the Duo Labs umbrella. So we thought about that as a net new sort of strategic R&D function. And over time, what we discovered is as we grew that team up, that there were some natural efficiencies that could be gained by grouping data engineering, which is sort of thinking about pipeline, you know, the systems bus between a lot of the different our storage systems and alerting systems, putting those groups together. So they're working collectively on our product objectives in one group. So we actually spun data science out and into engineering, where it now is sort of the whole data science and engineering group in that team. So we've had transitions of people, transitions of teams, and ultimately, we're always very open to sort of what's the right thing to find the intersection of what are people interested in, what do they want to get better at, and what are the jobs to get done for the business. So we really try to optimize at the intersection of those things to make sure people have fulfilling, challenging, and clear growth paths ahead of them.
That sounds like a kind of a thriving surrounding to be in. So when you think about delivery, I guess, you know, for these different teams, you know, like I guess Labs has its own delivery mindset, right? It's probably a little bit more further horizon. Might have, you know, the people sort of securing yourself. I guess how much sort of customer orientation, what's the methodology that you use to manage activity inside these security teams?
Yeah. So really all the work at the end of the day should be focused on what's good for our customers and what's good for our internal clients that are in other parts of Duo's business. And we think a lot about how do the company's values, you know, so being easy, effective, trustworthy, and enduring, apply to the things that we do inside for other teams inside the business. So while we have many of those functions, I mean, I mentioned, you know, a few of them when we talked about sort of how the org is designed. At the end of the day, I don't actually expect or necessarily want anybody else in the company to have to worry about how we're configured from an org chart. What I would like is they have, you know, one front door to come to for the security team and ask for help. And they know that when they do that, when they ask for help with an issue or have a technical question or are curious about something, because of course it's valuable for us to have a culture that's curious and interested in security topically, we want to make sure that it's easy for them to get an answer for us, that we can deliver that in plain language in such a way that it helps them get their job done. And the types of things that we're doing for other teams, if it's building a system, a tool, or something to help make their job easier, are enduring so that we're not constantly causing them to suffer from context switching as we change out tools or pieces of our stack, et cetera. We really want it to be ultimately easy for them to take security as part of their job responsibilities and execute well in their primary job function. Ideally, if I go up on stage at a company meeting and say, who here's on the security team? I should get, you know, 700-800 hands from the whole company. That's really kind of a chief measure of success for us, that people think of themselves as an extension and as a member of the security team in their day-to-day execution, whatever their day job is.
So like when you work with these development teams, right, or you work with other people in the organization, and the, you know, how do you keep incentivizing them, right? Or how do you keep them engaged in this desire to be a part of your security team, you know, and feel good about it?
The best way to do this and the cheapest way to do it is really to focus on reliably identifying, surfacing, and celebrating good security behaviors and good security hygiene. We have a friendly neighborhood security bot that reaches out to people on chat and says everything from, thanks for updating your phone to the latest release. You were one of the first few people to do that. You're doing your part to keep us secure. To, you know, providing in some cases spot bonuses to people who, you know, raise their hand and say, you know, hey, there's a problem over here and I want to be in front of it from a security standpoint. So it's much cheaper in the long run for you to focus on identifying and reinforcing what those good behaviors are and making it very visible what the desired behaviors are compared to, you know, going around and chasing people with a stick. Nobody wants to be chased with that, but they would much rather hear that they did a great job and have examples of what the organization expects and desires from them behavior-wise.
That's awesome. Do you think actually is that bot, like, you know, are these things you've written about or sort of you have published anywhere? It feels like everybody should be using the...
Yeah. In fact, I should probably write a blog post on this, but I'd say if you ever see a Duo employee's laptop in an airport or at a conference, one thing you'll note on there is, you know, people love stickers. Yes. So even little things like the first folks to report a phishing email that come into the security team, we'll sometimes give them, you know, a special kind of edition sticker that says they were the first to report a phishing or attack campaign on the organization. Again, just to recognize the importance of them executing on their day-to-day security responsibilities and helping them realize that those things are not trivial. And in fact, we love hearing from people when they have questions and comments. It shows that the extended sensor system is working well and people feel empowered to execute on their security responsibilities and that their contribution there matters.
That's awesome. You know, that's, you know, well, I think any good rewarding system should definitely involve stickers. So I think this is great. I love the... I guess there's sort of two things that you said here that I very much like, you know, like one is indeed the customer orientation, you know, sort of the thought of the security organization as a supporting organization, as a service provider to the rest of the org, you know, as opposed to like a naysayer or a, you know, whatever, a prison guard to try and sort of enforce it. And the second is just that emphasis about make security easy.
Yeah, both of them feed very much into the idea that, especially in a SaaS business, as you well know, Guy, you have teams that are continually shipping new code, deploying new services, setting up new instances in your cloud environment. And if your objective is to be in the way or a blocking or gating function on every single one of these things, that is a losing strategy relatively quickly, both in terms of the hearts and minds of the teams that you're trying to support, but also the velocity of the business is such that you'll never be able to actually keep up with that. And you sort of get into a place where your investment strategy can be out of whack from a security standpoint. So, you know, the best metric I think for us is that people continue to come and ask for help and assistance and ask questions to do their job better. And that means we are reliably delivering good customer service to them.
That's awesome. So let's dig into that a bit. So we'll talk a little bit about maybe the work with the development team. So what does it look like? How does your team engage with the development team as capabilities are built and assessed? How do you split responsibilities and engagement?
Sure. So for the day-to-day software engineering work that we're doing, at the genesis of a new feature or a new idea that we want to deliver, generally, there's an intake process where the AppSec team and the product management and the engineering leadership have an opportunity to discuss, you know, what are we trying to solve for and what's the level of engagement or support that the security team can provide to make sure we give the engineering team a higher degree of assurance and confidence that what they deliver will be secure and meet both security expectations of our business and of our customers. And, you know, that tends to vary. I mean, some engagements are very just sort of informative only in the sense that it's like, you know, thanks for letting us know and we'll be here if you need anything. Some of them are much more embedded and attached where we might be, you know, continually sort of assessing a broader project throughout or, you know, directly contributing to the code base for building tools and automation to support execution in some of the other client teams. But, you know, generally that's an agreement between the security practitioner that's involved along with the engineering and the product leadership. There's another engagement model too, of course, which you might expect, which is around in the event of a product security incident. And fortunately, we've had a relatively low volume of those, but everybody has to maintain good PCR practices. There's sort of an outbound practice whereby when we have a defect that's disclosed to our team, whether it's by a customer or a security researcher, we will proactively engage with the engineers and the product managers to bring in the right folks to, you know, validate the report, identify what the potential solution is, and work together on getting a fix out the door. So there's really sort of, you know, a couple of different engagement models to get into that. But I'd say at the end of the day, what makes all of that work is everybody has a good shared understanding that the security of our customers depends on us delivering secure and high quality software. And I think nobody views security as the security team's problem. They view us as helping make it easy for the engineers to deliver quality and secure software. So we really focus our energy on making sure everybody has that, and that sort of greases the skids for all the rest of the engagements.
So it sounds like, you know, I sort of understand the flow, I think. And I'd say in a lot of the cases, the initiative comes from the development team. They build something, they want to kind of, they reach out to you, you help them out, or you sort of at least give them a sense of how involved you, the security team, should be as part of the development or changes to this capability. On the other side, you've got kind of the response side. You know, you get a vulnerability report or something like that. It sounds like you take the lead over there and you engage the dev teams instead of on the other side.
Yeah, that's correct. Yep.
So in the middle, there's like, you know, security automation. If you think about, you know, like a secure pipeline and things like that, is that something your team builds? Is that something, you know, the dev team builds to support? How does that work?
Yep. So substantial amount of the tooling that runs in that middle space that you describe is built primarily by my team. We've actually open sourced a good chunk of our security alerting stack on our GitHub page. But you may have seen tools like Cloud Mapper, for example, that we've released, which solve problems that help our engineers, but also other parts of our organization, reason about how does our software look in a deployed context? How do we make it easier to think about, you know, organizing our production services, or where do we find that we've got other challenges? Like, for example, you know, an architectural scaling weakness. We build a lot of tools to help figure out some of those problems for the teams as well.
And this is, by the way, on github.com/duo security, right?
I believe it's the /duo-lab site. I can put it in the chat here.
Cool. Yeah, we'll post that link to the show notes.
Yep.
And so cool. So you build those notes, you open source them even better. You know, it's like, you know, you build these tools and share them around.
And a theme that you'll notice when you look at those tools is, like, if you just pull up the GitHub page and you just look at sort of the top view, you know, Cloud Mapper is helping people sort of reason about the total composition of their environment. Parliament, sort of the next one on the list, is all about linting AWS IAM policy to make sure that engineers don't inadvertently ship, you know, misconfigured or ineffective IAM policies. So many of these things are not about making it harder for the engineers to do their jobs. It's actually about sort of abstracting away some of the complexity or otherwise security challenges that might come in from some of these areas. We just build tools to help them solve those problems.
Perfect. And that's sort of precisely where I was going, which is, you know, like, are these designed as well to sort of be self-serve, I guess, by developers? So presumably if a development team is using Cloud Mapper, they can use it without needing you in the day-to-day use of it, and you use it to sort of govern or understand, or you engage with them on it when it's something deeper. Is that?
That's right.
Okay, very cool. And yeah, just for clarity, it's github.com/duo-labs.
And yep, that's right.
That's the right link that's posted. So cool. So you work with the dev team, sounds super healthy. Do you align, like, you mentioned before that you don't want the development team to need to know the exact way that you build your organization, but is there an element of partnership, or like, do they have some constant person that different dev teams would approach? Is it a ticketing system? Like, what's the actual kind of a approach, you know, when they want to engage, you know, what do they do?
Yeah, good question. So, you know, we go to where it's easiest for our engineers to work in terms of how we engage with them. So, for example, using the same ticketing systems that we use for source control and the rest of our engineering task tracking, we tend to do a great deal of work with our engineering teams in those same forums to make it easier for them. We also focus a lot of energy on some of the tooling interfaces, and you can infer this from some of the content on our GitHub site, plug into natural elements of the workflow where it's easy for engineers to get feedback. For example, in the build and deploy process, those are places that are, you know, further to the left than us reacting to something that's already been pushed out to our customers or something that we might get out of an audit. So there's generally a drive to do work where our customers and clients are operating and do that work as far left in the development lifecycle as possible. A, because it's less expensive for the business and for our engineers to do that. But B, it's also an opportunity to help and, you know, provide good calibrating feedback much earlier in the cycle that is likely to lead to good design outcomes.
Cool. So it sounds like an awesome system. So I'll kind of ask you a bit of an unfair question, you know, given that you have such a great handle on all of those. How do you measure all this stuff? Like, how do you know if you're doing the right things, if it's working, if it's not working?
This is a great question. I'm actually really glad that you asked this question, Guy, because you know, I generally have a real problem with security metrics and, you know, volumetric sort of bug counting and things like that. I think that those are not really sophisticated enough to describe many programs, and particularly not ours. Mark Stanislav, who's our AppSec lead, has done an awesome job of thinking about this problem and instead describes where we're at for AppSec as a maturity model. And this is helpful for a couple of reasons. One is, if we solely relied on defect reporting or how often we needed to release a security advisory to our customers, in some cases, it might be a year that we go between having to release a security advisory, or, you know, many, you know, when you have that long of a time lag to getting feedback, that's not necessarily indicative of success of your program, nor is the absence of evidence that there's a problem sufficient to communicate that your program has been successful. So the maturity model that we use at Duo is really a mashup of vSIM and SAM, if you're familiar with those two models. And we try to think about what is, you know, key metrics that come out of that are, what is the percentage of activities in that combined model where we have at least partial coverage? And what's the percentage where we have full coverage? And this is helpful because we can use this to drive continuous improvement. And we can also make reasoned decisions around, we're not going to do this activity because we think it's a low priority for our business, but we want to make sure that the high priority activities that we have in those lists are things that we're doing well, or we're approaching mastery in those particular areas. And it's also helpful too, because we might decide, you know, quarter over quarter, we maybe didn't focus enough time on a particular activity, and we can dial the score down on that to make sure we're tracking and continuing to invest in that the following quarter.
So like maturity models have a lot to sort of say for them. You know, there's kind of two primary critiques about them. You know, one is they're sort of oftentimes not super detailed, right? Like, you know, you can put a testing tool in your pipeline and check the box if that's what you were trying to do in the process, right? So, you know, like, do you have any more granularity? And the second is, you know, that it, they sometimes, people sort of imply that they're done, that at some point you've grown up, you know, you're mature and you don't need to do anything, while kind of reality is a bit more continuous. I guess, how do you think about those two challenges within the context of the maturity model?
Yeah, good question. You know, in total, the number of activities that we track in our maturity model, you know, I believe it's a little over 180 across a couple of different domains. We tend to be harsh graders of ourselves. So fortunately, we're not in any danger of, you know, believing that we're done, which is a good thing. But, you know, but we do still complement that with an understanding of what is our, you know, defect arrival rate, and tracking that to make sure that things like that are, you know, have scaled sublinearly against the growth rate of our code base, for example, to make sure that, you know, we're continuing to still deliver at a high quality software. But also, part of the reason I mentioned, you know, percentage of activities with partial coverage by domain is we're not necessarily always shooting for complete or done on every single activity. There are, you know, potentially low yield activities that we would like to be doing some of, but not necessarily having a complete mastery of. So, you know, I think there's a couple of different ways to track both the softer things like a maturity model with the harder things like actually counting number of defects, number of alerts, et cetera. But, you know, we try to take a complete view of the two over time.
Got it. Yeah, no, sounds, makes perfect sense. Can I veer you a little bit off to the side and talk a little bit about cloud security? So, you know, I find cloud security fascinating. It's, you know, is it dev minded? If is it not, is it infrastructure? How do you define, like, when you've got your sort of more product or sort of application security teams, right, that you mentioned at the beginning, and your cloud security, how do you define that divide, you know, and for instance, who owns containers in this context?
Yeah, I would look at it, if I were to map it against the software development lifecycle that we have at Duo, I would say sort of to the far left time horizon, we've got where the labs team is engaging. And part of that is strategically identify new technology opportunities, but also it's to define early, you know, what good security design parameters would look like for some of those things. So in many cases, like, for example, I'll touch on things like passwordless authentication. I'm sure you've heard of a emerging standard called WebAuthn. This is something that we work on, not just to make sure that we're ready to actually implement and deploy it when the time comes for our customers, but also to make sure that we really understand all the security properties of that and how to make sure we implement them with a high degree of assurance when we choose to productize things like that. So part of that investment starts really all the way in the applied research phase. The AppSec team is really focused on, as we are doing the work between product requirements and functional requirements to something landing in master where the build is green, that's sort of the set of activities that occur there. And then cloud security and cloud security architecture is really sort of the, what is the deployed context of that software and the infrastructure upon which it's riding, and how do we actually secure those elements of it? So there are some sort of natural kind of passings of the baton, if you will, between those phases. I would say that's something that we spend actually quite a bit of time tweaking, because as you might imagine, you do, especially in the second of those two transitions between AppSec and CloudSec, there's not really a fine, clear handoff in all of those cases. And in many cases, you know, it's a fade in, fade out between the two as we get into that phase of things. So that's generally how we kind of think about mapping those across kind of the development timeline.
Got it. That's actually like one of the crispest definition of that division that I've heard. And I guess it does imply or require that those three teams collaborate between themselves very well, right?
Yeah, extensively. And the cloud security team too, I would say, you know, I shouldn't cut them short because they do quite a bit of work further left in the SDL as well, because they are responsible in many cases for the security of the other environments in which we develop. So AppSec, for example, is not responsible for the security of developer workstations and some of the security tooling that allows them to confidently, you know, commit software, for example, to our code repo. A lot of the other supporting sort of guardrails that go around that come from the cloud security team to provide, you know, the necessary supporting infrastructure to make sure that we've got a, you know, relatively high assurance software security supply chain leading up to being ready to actually deploy that.
Got it. It really is awesome. Like, I love the sort of the structuring and kind of the interaction between the different entities. Maybe, you know, use the opportunity a little bit to talk about, you know, the broader Cisco world. You know, like, you know, you built a lot of this stuff probably in Duo, you know, sort of pre-acquisition, maybe evolved it past. How does it work kind of across Duo? You know, how is your security approach, you know, different maybe to other teams? How do you collaborate?
Yeah. So as you mentioned, you know, so we were acquired by Cisco. The deal closed in the fall of 2018. So we're coming up on a year and a half now. One of the things that's interesting, if you've gone through a very large acquisition, is if you strictly think about the acquisition as acceleration of revenue growth, that is probably a short-sighted view of the opportunity that you have coming into a really large enterprise as an interesting net new business. Really how we've tried to think about it is Cisco, having done well over 200 acquisitions, can do that for you, that being accelerate your revenue growth. But they also are very good about learning from acquisitions. And they generally sort of have this approach to, when they buy a company, in addition to accelerating their revenue growth through a very large sales force and really the best kind of partner sales organization in the world, they can also help learn what are the things that the acquired business does extremely well and then help scale them up and out to the other business units in the company. So when you look across Cisco, there are many, many, many cloud offers. Not all of them are necessarily growing up with the type of security background that we have. And what I've been really thrilled with is, A, I think there's been a great effort to make sure that other parts of the company understand what we do well, and we've been able to collaboratively sort of export some of our way of thinking, some of the tooling and technologies that we've had. We exchange people and ideas with other businesses, but also with the major corporate functions in the company. And that has been encouraging, because I think even just a, you know, what is probably a relatively short period of time of, you know, 15, 16 months now, we've seen a lot of really good business results. You can think about the cloud security posture strategy has a heavy hint of Duo Green in it throughout, and representation from many of the other large cloud businesses too, which is very, very encouraging to us. I would also say it's good for Cisco's customers because, you know, in a very large enterprise context like this, when I have peers like Meraki and AppDynamics, which are, you know, also very large cloud businesses, or OpenDNS, which now goes by the name Umbrella, that is a huge advantage for us to be able to openly share sort of under the tent of Cisco information about what our challenges are, the things that we do well, the things that we need help with. And you build up this sort of interesting immunity that comes from having that free flow of information across a very diverse set of cloud businesses, but all sort of working with the same company on the front of your badge. So I spend actually a great deal of time every week with my peers who run security for those other business units within Cisco. And that's been very, very fruitful for us as well from a defensive standpoint.
Cool. So each of these kind of groups can still sort of autonomously manage, and it's more about knowledge sharing and tool sharing and the likes between the groups, as opposed to, you know, whatever, sort of elevating and having some element of top-down mandate, you know, which is like,
that's right,
operate in this fashion or the other.
Yeah, that's right. Which has been very encouraging because, you know, if you look at, I mean, even just the businesses that I mentioned, Umbrella, Duo, Meraki, and AppDynamics, these are all very diverse businesses with different sets of objectives, different stages of their growth lifecycle, very different technology stacks. But I think, you know, I would potentially speak for my peers here in those other businesses by saying we all get a tremendous amount of value out of sharing openly and transparently with each other across all those dimensions that I mentioned.
Cool. You know, you deal a lot with this sort of cloud AppSec, you know, like cloud security or securing your applications when they are cloud operated and hosted. And, you know, a good portion of Cisco isn't, or maybe is moving into it. What would you say, like in these learnings, what are some of the highlights of the differences in how you should operate your kind of AppSec or your security practice if you were to, say, move to the cloud, right? If you were to open up a new managed service in an environment where you kind of have a handle on the non-cloud surroundings?
Yeah, good question. I think for businesses or products that are making a transition from on-premise to the cloud, or, you know, on-premise but with cloud management, there's probably a natural tendency to maybe just like pick things up and put them in the cloud and then figure the rest out later. But as I think, you know, as I'm sure you would agree, the cloud security space has evolved very rapidly, especially in the last, I mean, gosh, even the last 2 years, I feel like there's been tremendous changes. And complexity is the enemy of success in a lot of these cases. And unfortunately, a lot of the infrastructure and platform options that are out there can be very difficult to approach if you don't have prior experience, you know, building and operating on them. So searching for ways to provide, you know, operational safety and, you know, easy security properties for your developers to get as you undertake a transition like that ends up being a really important strategic goal that is important from the onset. Because, you know, I mean, look no further than some of the top cloud breaches that we've seen in the last several years, you know, misconfigured S3 buckets, open IAM permissions, you name it. Many of these just simply come from the fact that these are complex and difficult to configure properly services. So to the extent that you can kind of place the right guardrails in place to assure success for your engineers who are going through that difficult transition, ends up being just a really critical primitive that I think has to be motivating your security team throughout that process.
Yeah, definitely. It's no shift and lift, eh? There's no, it's not that simple. You know, you have to kind of work to maintain the simplicity. A lot of it is about right. that security hygiene at scale, right? Just being able to rein in the beast, otherwise would kind of get away from you. So I don't know, like I have like a pile more questions.
Yeah, I can keep going. I'm doing good on time if you want to keep going.
I'll do one more and then I'll kind of ask you about that sort of pet peeve. So you've got a really interesting perspective here, Mike, you know, between, you know, on one hand, you know, you've got your sort of forward thinking approach of security inside Duo, then you've got the collaboration with the other groups within Cisco, but then you also have the approach with the customers. How much do you and your team engage sort of Duo, the security product, you know, when you're trying to make a sale, you know, beyond just talking about why Duo itself is secure, but rather around like the substance of what Duo offers? And does that change anything to like who you hire or how you work? Is it good, bad?
Yeah, that's another great question. The answer is extensively to all those dynamics of it. I'm a big believer that in addition to making it easy for our engineering and product teams to deliver, you know, excellent secure software, we also have a responsibility to be trusted advisors to our customers. So to that end, where we see opportunities to assist our customers, or, you know, if it's in the sales cycle, if I can bring to bear the folks who operate our own Duo deployment or who have influenced the strategy with which we deploy Duo inside Cisco, to share knowledge and experience, best practices, ways of thinking about using our product with our customers, that's going to help them maximize the value that they get out of coming to us as a service provider. We know they have a lot of options, and it's not just paying a monthly subscription for SaaS. It's their day-to-day customer experience with working with us. And we have an important set of responsibilities in that. I'd say the second piece is, you know, we also get a lot of value out of those engagements, because I generally find a lot of the security team to security team conversations, I can get really candid feedback from my peers about what's not working, what do they want to see? And that's a perspective that I can share back with our product team in a way that I think is a little bit unique, just because in general, I can sort of understand where some of those things are coming from in a different light, especially when I'm talking to a peer security leader. Yeah, exactly. We're also customer zero. So I sort of alluded to this a moment ago, but we protect all of our own infrastructure with the beta version of our product. So that's important for two reasons. One, I would rather find and fix an issue internally first before it gets to our customers. Two is we want to be the most sophisticated user of our own product to make sure that feedback about what we like, what we don't like, what's working for us feeds directly back into our product team. So very important on that front. The second piece is, you know, many of the folks on our team also came from organizations that are customers of Duo. So we've had a lot of folks who have led security at various customer organizations who have come in to work with us. And each one of them brings with them really important customer empathy and customer expectations and customer experience that shapes our larger security strategy and, you know, helps us think about how to best engage with our own constituents.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think that's definitely kind of a unique proposition. You know, I like, you know, we talk about this in Snyk, we sort of talk about it in developers and the security side, you know, like you build developer tools. And so the developers have opinions. You have to be careful to not over-rotate towards your opinions because you're not always the profile, but, you know, still they have opinions and empathy the security people have, you know, some sort of empathy. I guess you want to maximize the value you get out of those.
Yeah, exactly. And a good way to think about this in terms of just like abstracting it to, you know, more generally accessible concept is, I don't necessarily expect the security team to all act as product managers, nor would I expect our engineers to all become security engineers. But what I do want them to understand is, you know, some of the primitives of good product management, like what are the things that will make it easier for our clients, engineering in this case, easier to get their job done, and how do we prioritize and actually deliver solutions that are easy for them to use. So many of the same kind of primitives that you'd see in delivering a product, if it's a requirements documentation or user stories, functional requirements document, agile sprints to actually go build and deliver this stuff, we run our security team very much in the same way any other engineering team would run, because that's the model on which we want to deliver to our customers.
Oh, that's awesome. So I think there was like a ton of great insights. Thanks a lot for sharing all of that. And before I kind of let you get back to sort of running that security empire, can I ask you, I like to ask every guest, you know, if you have one kind of piece of advice, right, or one, you know, bit of emphasis for some security practice you want to give a team looking to level up their security, what would that be?
The most important piece of advice I would give is seek diversity of experiences, diversity of thought, diversity of opinion on security, because the reality is our space, as we sort of touched on a few times during this conversation, is moving so quickly at any given time that it's really, really dangerous for your security team to get trapped in what's always worked or what worked last time. And you have to constantly be challenging yourself, I think, when you're hiring, in terms of looking for people who will bring new contribution and ways of thinking to your team. If you just hire for fit, you're going to miss those opportunities. What you want to look for is actually a contribution to your way of thinking. So really, I would challenge teams to not just go look for, you know, what worked in their last gig or, you know, what worked on their last hire, and really think deeply about what's going to help them get to the best possible business outcome. And on that second point, really focusing on business outcomes, because security teams are, at the end of the day, trying to help increase the level of assurance and confidence and de-risk the business's delivery to customers and internal clients. And if you lose sight of that, if you don't understand what the business is trying to accomplish, again, that's a case where your credibility as a team can go downhill very, very quickly, and it's very hard to recover from that.
Yeah, well, awesome pieces of advice. So if people want to join your team, you know, I assume you're hiring, where should they go search?
Yep, we're hiring, plenty of roles open across Duo, and we continue to grow inside Cisco. You can go to duo.com/jobs if you're interested in looking at some of those open positions.
Perfect. Well, Mike, this has been a pleasure having you on board. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, guys. It's been a pleasure to be here. Appreciate it.
And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. And I hope you join us for the next one.
Thanks for listening to The Secure Developer. That's all we have time for today. For additional episodes and full transcriptions, visit mydevsecops.io. If you'd like to be a guest on the show or get involved in the community, you can also find us on Twitter at mydevsecops. Don't forget to leave us a review on iTunes if you enjoyed today's episode. Bye for now.